I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Very well.
Thank you. This court should reverse Mr. Kiske's conviction for rape because the Commonwealth failed to establish that Ms. Arandia was physically helpless and therefore didn't prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. We begin with the definition of physically
was
helpless.
Is that a question for jury?
No,
the jury instructed on that very point.
They absolutely were, but the reason we have an appellate court is because sometimes juries and judges just get it wrong.
Well, I think we can cut to the chase here.
Yes, sir.
What we're talking about is whether the victim here was physically helpless or not.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely.
Now, in the light most favorable, and I'll grant you there are inconsistencies, or at least apparent inconsistencies, but in the light most favorable of the Commonwealth, doesn't she say that she was asleep when she was penetrated?
There is one question that is asked of her that is what I would argue is leading and inartful, wherein she is asked specifically, when you first felt this penis inside your vagina, how awake were you? And she says, I was still asleep. I felt it was my husband. But then when you read the two questions prior to that, where she says, can you describe for the jury how awake you were when you felt your pants come off? I was asleep. I was kind of half asleep. I could feel it, but I was asleep. Were you aware of that person who was taking your pants off? No, I thought it was my husband. So that question in and of itself, but when you look at everything else surrounding it, the
well,
questions that are asked.
Well, how about pages 76 and 77 of the appendix?
Mm-hmm.
When you opened your eyes and saw him on top of you, mm-hmm. where was his penis in my vagina?
Right, but opening your eyes is not awake. She was awake prior to that. Opening your eyes is not synonymous with being awake, especially when you look at the rest of her testimony where she specifically describes feeling somebody get on top of her.
But the fact finder got to weigh all those inconsistencies you're talking about, and I presume that the nature of the context of the answer and versus the questions and all was argued. So they sifted all of that, and of course our role sitting at this level is there evidence in the record in the light most favorable of the prevailing party below that supports it? That's why I asked the question. And I hear you saying, yes, but. And
well,
it seems to me we stop with yes, don't we?
No, because what I would argue is there are actually no inconsistencies in her testimony. She maintains the entire time that she was awake from the time somebody got into bed with her, which preceded penetration.
This you just quoted her as saying she said she was asleep.
Right, but when you look at the two questions before that where she says that she was, all of those were just simply to elucidate the previous, her state of being. The definition of unconscious requires somebody not be able to speak. She spoke prior to penetration. She specifically said, not now, Carlos, I'm with the kids, or something to the effect of, the kids are here, not now, Carlos. That was
prior
to penetration.
Well, it was, I was still asleep, and I felt it was my husband,
mm-hmm.
and I start saying to him, etc. But,
right.
So, it's really, and how could it be otherwise? If you are in that state of somnolence or whatever, and this happens,
mm-hmm.
why would we expect perfect recollection and clarity?
Because she did have perfect. She never said, I don't remember, except when she said she didn't remember if she spoke softly or loudly when she
talked
about
saying it. I mean, at a minimum, she says she was half asleep.
Right, but that's not unconscious. That would be a semi-conscious state, and that's not what the definition is.
It isn't so much whether you're conscious or unconscious, it's whether you're physically helpless or not. Now, clearly you are when you're unconscious.
Correct.
But at what point in the course of waking up, maybe this relates to Judge McCullough's question, where do you cross the threshold between as you're waking up, especially when you're clearly tired to begin with, and you're being awakened by some outside force, at what point do you cross the threshold from consciousness to from unconsciousness to consciousness, and isn't that a jury decision?
Well, it's not in this case because they simply got it wrong. The evidence did not establish that she was physically helpless. When you look at unconscious and the definitions provided in Woodward that describe sleep and unconsciousness, it describes being insensible to the reception of any stimuli, incapable of performing or experiencing any controlled functions, losing the capacity for sensory perception. So if that's our definition of unconscious, she perceived events. When you look at the entirety of her testimony, she perceived somebody getting on top of her. She had the thought process of, this is my husband getting into bed with me and that he wants to have sex with me. She felt her pants being removed, so she's perceiving that sense of her pants being removed, the sense of touch. She is described in redirect, where she says, how were your eyes feeling at that time? Well, I was very tired. So once again, she's having a thought process. She's feeling things. She's describing things. She says her eyes were burning. That's a very in-depth detail of what was going on. We've all been in a position where our alarm goes off and we don't want to open our eyes and get out of bed, but we're still awake and we know what's going on. We know it's time to get up. That's exactly what stage she's in. She simply chose to not open her eyes until...
isn't there this... essentially a twilight or whatever we want to call it between consciousness and full sleep. And here's someone who was up late, who was drinking, and who is obviously completely exhausted. So, and who I don't think the record supports was fully awake. So if the statute says physical helplessness, can't a jury... take all of that into account and say, well, you may not have been fully asleep, but you were still physically helpless because of all these circumstances.
No, because the legislature's provided a definition of physically helpless. Unconscious. Somebody knocks you out. You're in a coma. That's unconscious. You're physically unable to communicate because you can't... She actually communicated. If we didn't have a specific definition that then was elucidated with Woodward, then we could say, perhaps we might be able to say that this semi-conscious state qualifies as it, but it doesn't. The legislature speaks, and it could not be more clear. Unconscious.
Well,
it's not
or
a sliding
other condition.
Scale.
It doesn't just say unconsciousness. Now, let's be straightforward when we make an argument. Why don't you read what the statute says?
Unconsciousness or any other condition would otherwise render the complaining witness physically unable to communicate an unwillingness to act, and she communicated. So she's not unconscious, and she was able to communicate. That's the full definition of physically unconscious.
That's the full definition.
Or physically helpless, absolutely. That's from the statute. And then when we look at Woodward, how it describes unconscious, it goes into greater detail, saying you can't perceive the events going on around you. You can't perform any controlled functions. She spoke, she had a thought process, she felt her eyes were burning, she felt her pants being removed, she felt somebody get in bed with her. She simply chose not to open her eyes. She was awake. Because the definition is what it is, this is not a half proposition. It's either all or nothing. You either are unconscious and unable to communicate, or you are not. And she was conscious. When you look at Woodward, what happened in that case is that she woke up to being having sex with her. The other cases I cited where they say that, for example, physical infirmities are not physical helplessness in the context of the statute, where you might think physically helpless would mean you can't move because you're physically helpless, but they specifically say it means you cannot communicate in Wachter. And then in Howard, somebody not remembering certain things or having diminished capacity is not unconsciousness or physically helpless. And I would liken Ms. Arandia's state more to that, in that she may have that diminished capacity, and the Commonwealth even concedes in their brief that she was not fully conscious and had limited perception, so they concede that she was partially conscious, and that's why it's important to look at the specific definition where it says unconscious. And, you know, it's not as if what Mr. Kieske did was, I'm not condoning his behavior, but what he did was commit an assault and battery. There is no rape by fraud statute in here, so the fact that she perceived it was her husband, sensory perception.
I'm surprised that this wasn't prosecuted as a standard rape, to be quite honest with you, because we've upheld, minimal force is
required.
Correct. It's only sufficient to overcome consent.
Mm-hmm.
So
at the beginning of the trial...
I just think you're going a step too far when you say this is nothing more than assault and battery, with all due respect.
Well, I guess we'll have to disagree about the what actions actually took place, but nonetheless, what happened here was that Ms. Arandia was not unconscious, and that's really what this court has to decide. Was she or was she not unconscious? And when you look at everything that she did, and there are several questions that were asked by both the prosecution and myself that describe and demonstrate that she was physically awake. She simply didn't have her eyes open. She was in a tired state. She wanted to go back to sleep, all of these other things, but that doesn't equal unconscious. The Commonwealth specifically asked her, what woke you up? There was somebody on top of me. I thought it was my husband, once again. Feeling somebody on top of her prior to penetration and thinking it was her husband, having a thought process. Do you recall who took your pants off? sort of like I was half asleep. I don't remember exactly, but I thought that it was my husband was taking my pants down. So once again, feeling her pants being taken down, thinking it's her husband getting into bed with her. Was there a time when you felt your pants come off? Yes. How awake were you when your pants came off? I was asleep. I was kind of half asleep. I could feel it, but I was asleep. So she kind of goes back and forth when she describes this thing. But if you feel it, you're not asleep. You're awake. Were you aware of what person was taking your pants off? No, I thought it was my husband. So once again, thinking about who was taking her pants off. Could you feel somebody get into bed? No, I didn't feel when somebody was getting into bed. I felt when they were on top of me. So she could feel them prior to pants being taken off and prior to penetration. And then this is on cross-examination. Could you feel your pants being taken off? That's right. And then I asked her, you were awake enough to know that your pants were being taken off, right? Yes, I felt that was her answer. And then I followed that with, and you said right after that, so right after her pants were being taken off, which would be prior to penetration, not now Carlos. She said, yes. I said, Carlos, the kids are here, let me sleep. But I don't know if I said that in a loud or a soft voice because I was half asleep. So prior to penetration, she speaks. So when you look at the definition saying unable to communicate, it's completely gone. She communicated. So she clearly was able to communicate, thereby not meeting the definition of physically helpless. And I continued to ask her, when you felt your pants were being taken off, you believed that it was your husband wanting to have sex. Yes, uh-huh, was her response. You knew it was happening the entire time it was happening. She says, almost yes. And then on redirect, when did you think it was your husband in bed with you? When he got in the bed. So prior to any pants being taken off, prior to even getting on top of her, anything of that nature. Do you remember him getting in bed? I could feel something when the bed was moving, but then when I felt that, it was when he was on top of me. So it appears it was sort of one sort of fluid motion. When you felt it on top of you, who did you think it was? That was her husband, she said. What was your level of asleep at that point when you felt this person get into bed? She said, I was tired. Once again, she's feeling things. She's perceiving events as they're going on around her because she's able to describe that she's tired. They asked specifically how her eyelids were feeling at that point, and she said her eyes were burning, that she wanted to sleep, and how awake were you? Were you wide awake when your pants were taken off? So I was half asleep. But when you look at the case law, which is not a lot of case law, and also the definition, wide awake is not what determines whether or not somebody is physically helpless or not. I would argue that if somebody describes themselves as half asleep, that means that they're half awake, and so they are then therefore conscious and able to communicate. What's important also to note is that if she were unconscious, she would not have been able to testify about all of these things that she perceived and felt prior to penetration. She wouldn't have been able to perceive those events enough so that she could form answers and testify. She never said, I don't remember any of that. She never said, I couldn't feel it. She never said any of those things. And at that point, she was clearly conscious of what was going on around her. The Commonwealth points out in their brief about actions of Mr. Kiske afterwards. Those are completely irrelevant to the analysis of whether or not she was physically helpless at the time.
Into your rebuttal.
Okay, very well. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
May it please the Court, good afternoon. Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. As this Court has noted, whether or not the victim was physically helpless was a question for the jury. And it is a question that is entitled to deference, and that determination should not be overturned unless there is no evidence to support it. This record was replete with evidence to support this. The victim repeatedly testified that she was woken up when someone was on top of her and placed their penis in her vagina. She testified that it basically happened very quickly, and as soon as she woke up, as soon as the penis was in her vagina. At that point, once the penis had already been, once the assault had already begun, she told the man, whom she believed was her husband, to stop because their children were in the bed. She testified to this in a narrative form during direct examination when she said on appendix page 60, I was still asleep, and I felt it was my husband, and I start saying to him, Carlos, the kids are here by me, let me sleep. That was in response to the question, when you first felt his penis inside your vagina, how awake were you? To the extent that she testified that the speaking occurred prior to penetration, that was in response to cross-examination.
But of course she gave varying testimony.
That's correct, Your Honor, but the jury was entitled to consider all of the testimony and choose which parts were credible. I would point that this victim testified by an interpreter, and I think that it's possible that there were some language issues throughout this trial.
And it may be, but of course we're stuck with the record.
Absolutely. I'm noting perhaps that could
well,
be.
Let me ask you this. How do you respond to Ms. Biederach's point that she points to the various places in the record where the victim here says, I was asleep, but I was sensing things in essence. And I understood her argument to essentially be that's inconsistent and, frankly, impossible to be both asleep and perceiving things. And you know, obviously, you're correct. If we are to parse this to the point where we take isolated statements as related by the interpreter that she was asleep and ignore everything else, I think your point's well taken. But can we do that given that she's consistently saying, I was asleep and I was feeling things. I was asleep and feeling things. And does asleep really mean asleep under those circumstances?
I think that this court has already articulated in Woodward that being asleep is not an all or nothing proposition. And in Woodward, the court further stated that unconsciousness can mean temporarily lacking full awareness. I think that you can be half asleep and vaguely aware of what's occurring, but not be able to
semi-conscious equals unconscious for the purpose of the statute. Is that your position?
I think that in Woodward acknowledged that sleep is not an all or nothing proposition.
Well, there are different. I mean, scientists will tell you different stages of sleep.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Where you're deeper in sleep or not.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think, I mean, anecdotally, you have people who talk in their sleep who interact with individuals without actually. With no recollection of it later, or you have situations where you have some consciousness. I think that the prosecutor described to the jury during closing arguments some situations where you can be semi-conscious but not able to affect, actually communicate a lack of consent.
I gather you would argue that to the extent there were inconsistencies in this testimony, that the jury considered them and reached the conclusion it did.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. And I would also note that the discussion of the burning eyes, any time that the victim was discussing her burning eyes, that was actually after the penetration had already occurred when she says, please get off of me, or, you know, not now. And she didn't want to wake up, but then he didn't stop assaulting her, and so that was when she decided to open her eyes because he had stopped. I mean, presumably, well, I won't go there. And she only opened her eyes when the defendant refused to stop assaulting her.
I mean, it looks like once she awoke, he immediately fled.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so it may be that he thought he could just, she would be so utterly exhausted he could get away with this. And then once he realized, oh, no, she's awake.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
He flees, so that may be a circumstance that's consistent with his guilt versus.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think that's consistent with his statements to the husband that, oh, no, she's having a nightmare. She doesn't know what she's talking about. She's crazy, which is the statements that he made to the husband after the husband confronted him. Importantly, the Woodward Court found that the question of whether or not somebody is unconscious is a question for the jury. And all of these arguments that are being made today before this court were made before the jury, and the jury rejected them. Because there was, in fact, credible evidence to support the jury's decision, I would ask that you affirm. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Essentially, what the Commonwealth wants this court to do, and what it wanted, I guess, the trial court to do, is use one line and convict my client based on one line. Of her testimony, when you look at the entirety of it, and we talked about this previously, no fact finder can just arbitrarily disregard believable testimony. And we embraced Ms. Arandia's testimony because it was believable of what happened. It conformed with what Mr. Kiske said in the trial, and it conformed with what she had said previously. So they can't arbitrarily disregard every other statement that she made that said that she was half asleep or she could feel things. So there is no evidence to support the claim that she was unconscious. When the Woodward Court speaks of an all-or-nothing proposition, they're saying sleep is not a permanent position like unconsciousness is. It's not all or nothing in the sense that you wake up or you have periods where you have
it's not like
sleep
a coma, in other words.
Correct. So they're saying it's not all or nothing, like the typical what we would think of unconscious meaning. When they talk about lacking full awareness, she was fully aware of what was happening. other than the fact that she thought it was her husband and it was Mr. Kiske. She was fully aware that somebody got in bed with her. She was fully aware that her pants were being taken off. She was fully aware that the person who got into bed with her and took her pants off wanted to have sex with her. She was fully aware of what was going on, of her state of sleep, because she described her eyes as burning. And I'll have to disagree with the Commonwealth that that was not after penetration. When you look at the context of the questions, it was after the person got into bed with her. She was asked how her eyelids were feeling at that point. She described burning. That was prior to penetration. The facts of that are on page 77 in the appendix. So when you look at all of that together, all of that supports the feeling that she's unconscious. The fact that Mr. Kiske fled, she screamed and he slapped her in the face, evidencing her lack of consent at that point, and he left. His statement to the police was that he was drunk and thought he was having sex with his girlfriend, who he lived with in a room next door. And so when he realized, when he realized that this was not supposed to happen, he left. But that, once again, that's completely irrelevant to whether or not she was physically unconscious or physically helpless, because that's what the Commonwealth had to demonstrate on her part, not what he was believing or what he was perceiving or his intent. It had only to do with her physical helplessness. Because she was conscious, she was feeling things, she was sensible to where she was able to perceive the events that were going on around her, she was not unconscious or physically helpless. And as such, the Commonwealth failed to prove Mr. Kiske's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
Thank you very much. We'll come